There's been great changes over the last 10 years. The first part to refer to is the term you use as profession, and that is something we'd like to all strive towards being recognized as a profession. As we know, in different regions, different countries, different levels of qualification, there's a bound in the people that are working in our CCSDs. And in the South African context, they range from young individuals that have not had any experience in any form of formal learning, and in some cases, not people who aren't even 100% literate yet.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there, ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Zana Jardine, Decontamination Clinical Specialist and Head of SAFMED Education. Zana holds a nursing master's degree from the University of Witwatersrand and has presented at a variety of congress on her specialty area, which is the decontamination of medical devices. Zana was elected as the chairperson of the CFSA, which is the CSSD or Sterile Processing Forums of South Africa, and that was in 2018. Following the retirement of their first national chairperson, Denise Sheard, Zana represents the CFSA on the South African Bureau of Standards Technical Committee, TC1039, Medical Devices and Sterilization of Healthcare Products. Bob, really excited to just expand this global focus and discussion in our conversation with Zana today.
I agree totally, Justin. I'm so excited about this. It's always amazing to me to hear a perspective, a different perspective, one from another country, to hear the challenges they're facing and various things. So I'm super, super excited about this one.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening
Welcome to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Zana Jardine, decontamination clinical specialist and head of SafeMed Education. Zana, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for the invite.
So what's going to be really great about this interview is we always have said Beyond Clean is the global voice of sterile processing. And I know in your world, we would refer to sterile processing as CSSD. And so we're going to be talking about a lot of these global perspectives, especially coming out of South Africa, and sterile processing perspectives and regional challenges. So I think maybe the biggest thing that we want to start with is giving all of our listeners an introduction to the CSSD forums in South Africa. Can you give us some background on that?
Certainly. We're a group of like-minded professionals. We started off as a very informal set of regional workshops, people getting together, trying to find ways for people to learn more, share information, share knowledge. And regionally, that happened or started about 20 or 30 years ago as CSSDs became more developed and individualized and with a little more autonomy in the South African context. Throughout the years, those workshops were our only source of information and learning. And eventually, we started to evolve. The lady who then became our national chairperson, her name was Denise Sheard, had the privilege of attending more formalized congresses like World Forum for Hospital Sterile Supply and realized the need to create a national group. And that's when we started evolving, when we started to create our national group known as the CFSA, CSSD Forums of South Africa.
Well, that's wonderful to hear about how you grew. It's always amazing to me to hear how either sterile processing or central service or medical device reprocessors or CSSDs, we all have this huge hunger for education. And it's just amazing to me to see professionals like you come together to just start out in regional programs and then ultimately growing into a national. So kudos to y'all for doing that. And I just think it's really amazing. So Zana, how would you say that instrument reprocessing, the profession itself, has changed over the last 5 to 10 years in South Africa?
There's been great changes over the last 10 years. The first part to refer to is the term you use as profession, and that is something we'd like to all strive towards being recognized as a profession. As we know, in different regions, different countries, different levels of qualification is abound in the people that are working in our CSSDs. And in the South African context, they range from young individuals that have not had any experience in any form of formal learning. And in some cases, not people who aren't even 100% literate yet, are involved in our profession and, are growing or hoping to be recognized as profession. We, however, have learned a lot over the last 10 and 15, 20 years, and the exposure to more and more internationally based stuff has made us realize that there's a lot out there and a lot for us to learn. As a result, we have moved away from or moved more towards automated processing, as in automated washer disinfectors, where in the past everything was completely manual. We have a diverse range or ability in our country where somewhere we really resource stricken and other areas where we're not, where we have decent resources. And so the range is quite great. There's still loads of manual reprocessing, but a great move towards automated. And I think a lot more emphasis or realization on the importance of design of the CSSD, the flow of the work. We've started to learn a little more about that. And in the South African context, we now have more and more standards and guidelines that we've adopted.
Yeah, that's excellent. A lot of times with automation, you're getting something more consistent. So when you're getting data, you can really look at process improvement probably more quickly and efficiently. And I also know that you have a master's degree in nursing. And so you have this clinical background, and you were just talking about, you know, moving this more towards a profession, sort of simultaneously making it more automated. But can you give us a little bit of a lay of the land in terms of how nursing and maybe the operating room theaters are interacting with sterile processing professionals? Because you obviously have, you know, a little bit of perspective on both sides of the equation there.
certainly in the South African context, I functioned as a unit manager in charge of the operating theatres. And in most instances, the operating theatre is the kingpin, of course, and the CSSDs tend to fall under that, or the CSSD unit manager will report into the operating theatre manager. Depending on the type of department size, mostly the bigger the department, the more levels of reporting. But generally speaking, there'll be a unit manager in charge of the operating room, perhaps one or two people supporting her in that role, and an individual hopefully in charge of the CSSD. The role of that person or the qualification of that person will vary. Some institutions, it may be a registered nurse. Some institutions, it is an enrolled nurse, is the term we would use in the South African context, or it in fact could be a technician. We thankfully have had some courses, very few, but some courses designed purely for CSSD technicians. And more and more people in the CSSD are becoming trained, but the training still is less formal. It's given mostly by companies. We have tried to develop in that we took on from the IDSC from the UK. We managed to present one of their courses for a period of time to try and grow and develop more staff in the South African context.
So in terms of like certification, that's been a big push in the United States. Do you have a push for certification going on in South Africa?
There is a goal that we would like everybody to be certified or qualified in some form, way, or means. And there is also a standard, a set of core standards, national core standards defined by the Department of Health that say that the individual in charge of the CSSD needs to be suitably qualified. There's no true definition, to the best of my knowledge, of what that qualification is, though. So that is a broad term, but of course we would all like to be as best qualified as possible. So there's no formal course, no formal specific guideline in terms of what a qualification for a CSSD person or the unit manager of a CSSD.
And then I'm really kind of setting up maybe some discussion around some regional challenges for CSSD teams and leaders. I know sometimes there can be a dynamic between CSSD and the operating room theater, and you kind of really laid out the reporting structure there, and then also just qualifications and how do we elevate somebody who is leading or managing CSSD to be able to advocate for that automation or technological improvements and ways to be able to do their job better. Does that align with some of the challenges that you see regionally, or are there other challenges that you're facing?
Certainly. It is, as we know, it's an area in the hospital that is not an income generator, and it is one that requires a lot of support. We're finding that if we draw into our world infection preventionists, and we rely on our infection preventionists in our hospitals to help support us, to help explain the need for what it is we need, the types of consumables, the types of equipment that we need. So that department needs a lot of support to be able to justify the expense or the cost of doing what it is we do. And of course, at the end of the day, to produce a medical device that's safe to use on a patient.
So something that has come up many times in our conversations here in the U.S., and I'm curious if you know, in your own setting, you know, the compensation challenges, and this goes into the question of certification and training and skill set, but there are many jobs in the United States that pay commensurate, if not more, with sterile processing, which have much lower expectations on the staff. You know, so this may be restaurant work. This may be some type of retail position where it's not necessarily life or death if you don't pay attention to detail and if you're not good at what you do. Do you see similar compensation issues there in South Africa as it relates to how you're competing against the market?
Certainly. Again, we have many individuals who often start in the arena of cleaning staff and in that way try and improve their knowledge and have this desire to learn and often incredibly eager to learn, and as a result do learn and do grow. But the compensation is they start off as that of a cleaning person. And that's, as we know, not a well remunerated position to begin with.
It's amazing to hear, Zanna. So when we talk about all of the challenges that we face. It was really interesting to me to hear the literacy piece that you were talking about. And it's almost ironic here that in the U.S., so I'm in Texas, and we often will hire folks who English may not be their first language. So we will have challenges in folks that they want desperately to be certified, but they really struggle with reading and comprehension of the materials to pass the exam. And it's really amazing to me to hear this global or the global challenges that we face really everywhere. Can you tell me what some of the, I guess along those lines, what some of the biggest needs and challenges might be for CSSD technicians in your area?
It's definitely exposure to knowledge. The more knowledge we have in a manner or a method that's easily acceptable or easy to understand or easy to interpret is really an ideal scenario. For example, when we're training the courses that I run, we use images, loads and loads of photographs from a personal protection information act perspective. It is tricky to manage, but we try use photographs of that which is wrong and that which is right to try and illustrate good practice and try and illustrate poor practice. And we use the comparison to teach with. Also, when we're testing and we actually do our testing levels in the classroom setting, we have got groups of people from different ranges of education levels. So verbally, you might refer to a microorganism, but then again, you'll show an image of something which somebody else understands clearly, but you'll use the terminology of bug. So we try and compensate to do that, to be able to allow people access to knowledge. Another thing that I think is working for us and going forward seems to be working is making use of things like social media, making use of having most people get access to the internet generally via a smartphone and can do things like listen to these kind of podcasts, get information firsthand. I am finding podcasts, video formats, that kind of information or that access to information is really easy to understand and nice to follow.
Oh, that's fantastic. We've been receiving feedback over here that folks are actually playing podcasts during the work shift that folks are working. So it's really neat to hear. And I think you're right. I think it's really wonderful to hear perspective from other folks so they can learn while they're working and kind of going on. So kind of shifting from that, are there any unique trends that you're seeing or any technologies being used that are present in other regions? I know you spoke a little bit earlier about a lot of manual cleaning still happening, but with the automation, are there any other really cool things that are happening down in your area?
Bearing in mind, of course, that we have, as I said, a range of technologies in the country and resources. In some areas, we're now finding that we have, I think it is 6 Da Vinci robotics installed. So we have a move towards managing a complex devices and a bit more of a move towards the use of low temperature sterilization. That's definitely something that's very relevant to us now, because of those complex devices and the minimal invasive surgical techniques that we're seeing more and more often, certainly in our environment, tends to be in the more private hospitals, although some in the provincials. We've heard of 3D printing devices the other day. I think there was one on a child who had an implant in their ear of a device that was 3D printed. So there is definitely some touching on newer technologies happening in our country and more complex devices.
The 3D printing is really an interesting concept, and you almost see it as there might be a way to recycle that material, you know, versus in some ways it emulates single use, but on another end, we might be able to utilize that material and reprint. And so you're almost reprocessing in a way. I think there's a lot of future opportunity there, 100%. You know, we talked about certification and we touched on, you know, social media a little bit and podcasting, and Bob had just mentioned how we know different frontline technicians and leaders are utilizing the podcast as something that they can listen to while they're doing their jobs, and it lets them sort of multitask. But we've also gotten feedback from vendor organizations that are utilizing the podcast to help train their, you know, field sales and operations team members. And I know that one of the things that we're hoping to do with the podcast is role model some critical thinking skills and really give, especially in that vendor community, a broader perspective outside of just the product that they sell, but really being able to understand the industry and CSSD or SBD in a holistic manner and broaden that viewpoint. And I think it will help them be able to support their customers even better because they'll understand how what they're doing will impact the entire system. But you talked about social media, but we didn't get into specifics. And I wondered what kind of resources you found useful for education and networking and collaboration. I know you spoke generally, but are there groups on Facebook that are going on and being utilized in South Africa? How much is LinkedIn a component of getting that networking done? Maybe we could go a little bit deeper on that topic.
Certainly. So from an overall perspective, I tend to make use of a huge number of resources and follow the SBD Professional Group, I think it is, on Facebook. I follow you guys on Facebook. I follow quite a few trends as well on Twitter. And then we share that and we engage with the rest of our team and those that have started to follow us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is relatively new. We've been advertising it and making people aware of it at our Congress this year and slightly, or we had started a little the year before, but we were a little less active. But now we really are trying to grow that and sharing more and more information. At some points, we are cognizant of the fact that America is a little different, and if we're following only American-based stuff, there may be some nuances that people may not understand in terms of how you do parameter release. So we want people to learn, but we also want people to understand there are nuances between the different regions and countries, and depending on whose standards and guidelines you follow, tend to change our perspective a little bit. So although there's a lot of stuff out there, we are cautious to understand that some of it is different. I make a lot of use of Steris University, incredible resource for information. And of course now you guys, and Facebook is definitely one of the ones that we're making good use of. Twitter, we are growing in terms of sharing information, but we're still a little low on that. LinkedIn, a little bit of use on LinkedIn. Again, also some of the professional groups we follow on LinkedIn. And that's the source of information, what's happening in the country, what's happening in the world. And that gives us good headline news of things that matter and are of importance. Little things like multi-drug resistant bacteria are problematic, and they at the end of the day will influence us, and they are definitely having a little influence on our reprocessing. We've changed a little bit. There tends to be more management of fogging of units and fogging of CSSDs even when we're having outbreaks or we're having issues with CREs, for example. So we use all of that those resources to make us aware of what's happening in the world.
How can they find you on Facebook? I'd like to put out that information because I think, you know, looking at different best practices and different forms is really good. And even for the frontline technicians and managers here in the United States, I think seeing what your conversations are like would be hugely beneficial. How can they find you?
So if you search for the CSSD Forums of South Africa, so you will type CSSD, the acronym in capital letters, Forums of South Africa, then you should find our Facebook page. Like us and we'll keep you posted.
All right, final question. And we talked a little bit about how the instrument reprocessing profession has changed over the last 5 to 10 years. And I know you said really moving towards being recognized as a profession. And you talked a little bit about automation, but I'd like to just hear your vision for what might happen over the next 5 to 10 years based on what you've seen happen over the last 5 to 10 years.
I think multi-drug resistance is going to play a huge role on the amount of importance or the amount of focus that we play in what we are doing. We don't have antibiotics. That means that the basics of what we do has to really and truly be 100% correct. And I think that'll play more and more and more in our field, which means we'll be we'll have more controlled, I hope, and more standardized practices, and hopefully more ways of assessing that we are actually doing what it is we're doing by verifying and validating our various processes. And we're a little behind in that in the South African context, but hopefully that's where we will go. So we'll be a little bit more automated, and we'll have methods and procedures in place to actually verify and validate that the machine is cleaning, or that the manual process that you have just done is actually the way it should be. I also think we'll see more and more moves towards minimal invasive surgery and more types of minimal invasive surgery, meaning more complex devices. With more complex devices, of course, will come specialized ways of cleaning, as well as more use of low temperature sterilization because of those types of devices. What we've also noticed lately in the last year or so, which is really great, for the first time we have legislation in South Africa that governs the fact that you may not reuse a single-use device. With time, we hopefully will move away from anybody reusing single-use devices, and hopefully we will also use less and less, as you call it, flash or immediate-use steam sterilization as well. The technology is changing. Our methodology needs to change with it, and I do believe we will evolve a little more.
Yeah, you really touched on something at the very beginning there about drug-resistant bacteria and running out of antibiotics. And everybody knows that we're hitting this point. And I feel like this is an underrated, but should be a very large concern, that a lot of times we hear all the time that if it's not clean, it can't be sterile, which is great. And the devices are getting more complicated. And at the same time, one of the ways that we sort of mask if the instrument's been effectively cleaned or not is by giving the patient prophylactic antibiotics, which means we're giving them antibiotics ahead of the case and even afterwards to make sure that they don't get an infection. But as this drug-resistant bacteria continues to be more, I guess, sophisticated or advanced, we're running out of runway here. And so the more that we advance the design of instruments without really picking up the back end, do you feel like there's a potential to hit a breaking point here and really wind up with some issues around infections? I know CRE is maybe the big red flag waving its hand at us to say this is coming.
Absolutely. It's complicated. It's really, really, really complicated. And we're nervous. We have CREs are growing tremendously. You know, we're realizing where we're at, although not all of our statistics are readily available. As we know, some people will hold on to those facts and others make it general knowledge. But I do believe that's going to play a huge role on what happens to us in the future. We really are cognizant of it in the South African context. We also have Candida to worry about. We have HIV has been a huge issue for us, and hepatitis is an issue for us. And TB is phenomenal in our hospitals and in our patients. So that has a huge impact, I think, at the end of the day on how we approach things. Even though we manual in some instances, we are acutely aware of outbreaks of infection, and we're acutely aware of the levels and types of infections that are around in our country, in our society.
Zana, you did an amazing job. I really appreciate you making time for us today. It's always great to have that global perspective for our audience, and we do get many, many downloads in other countries. And so the more we can have individuals like yourself on the show, I think the better quality and the larger perspective that everybody that listens to the Beyond Clean podcast will have. So I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on. I know for us, it's this morning right now, and for you, it's this afternoon, but I appreciate you making time as we head into the weekend, and wanted to thank you again for all your insights.
Absolute pleasure. Who will I meet at WFHSSS this year?
You're going to meet Peter Nickel and Hank Balch. So and Bob, are you going?
I'm going. Super excited.
Awesome.
That was Zana Jardine, decontamination clinical specialist and head of Safe Med Education. Bob, I think that last part of the conversation was really almost like a call to action, and it really tied into Zana's whole movement, I guess, in South Africa towards more automated processes and also moving away from reusing single-use devices. So obviously they're really looking at the potential crisis with antibiotics that may be on the horizon, not just in South Africa, but across the world.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fascinating to me. We often talk about the challenges and get focused on the challenges that we face here. But man, when you hear some of the global challenges out there, and the things that they're having to deal with, particularly with infectious disease, it's really, really fascinating and kind of puts all this into perspective.
It's also nice to hear that there's a big movement towards making sterile processing recognized as a profession, but definitely some work to do, as she said, very general sort of guidelines around what the requirements would be for somebody to be qualified. And again, I think this is going to be a challenge that we're going to see across the world. And so we continue to help raise the awareness and the need for that and help provide resources and tools to assist. Bob, what do you think is a big takeaway or a big step that we maybe have made in the United States around increasing sterile processing recognition as a profession?
Yeah, I really think that the way that they're being looked at now, and I'm seeing more collaboration with the sterile processing department in the operating room. I'm seeing a much larger push for certification. We certainly have the national effort for certification happening, but locally, I see it a lot more where hospitals are saying, hey, if you want to work for us, you're going to have to be certified. And that's really, really a good thing. So it's something that I see quite a bit.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to our show. And if you have any future topics that you'd like us to cover, or if you want to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.